Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of Frank Villi. First I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Francesco Villi was born on January 2, 1949 in Italy. He went by the name Frank. In 1966, he and his mother moved to Toronto, Ontario, Canada. He started his own general contracting company called Villi Construction. At some point, Frank married. He went on to have three daughters and ultimately divorced. He became estranged from his daughters later. Frank injured his back and his right knee on a job site in November 1973. In 1974, he hurt his back again. In July 1986, he was involved in a motor vehicle collision. Someone rear-ended his vehicle. The same thing happened two more times in July 1990. A few months after that, he fell off a ladder at work. At this point, Frank said that he decided to abandon society because the world was moving toward lies and corruption. He purchased 34 acres of property in rural Ontario, where he constructed a six-bedroom house. He was involved in two more motor vehicle collisions in 1993 and diagnosed with adjustment disorder. This disorder is characterized by symptoms like anxiety and depression brought on by a stressor. But the symptoms are not severe enough to qualify for another diagnosis like generalized anxiety disorder or major depressive disorder. With all the mental and physical problems Frank had, he missed a lot of work, but his health insurance paid for his time off. In 1995, the insurance company stopped making the payments. Frank went to court to fight this decision, but he was accused of lying about the extent of his injuries and how often he was working. Ultimately, Frank went bankrupt and fell behind on child support payments. Eventually, he had to return to work to make a living. In October 2008, Frank moved to the town of Vaughan, which is just north of Toronto. He purchased Unit 414 in a condominium building called the Bellaria Residences, located at 9235 Jane Street. This was a 767-square-foot, one-bedroom, one-bath unit. The building was still under construction at this time. Frank was one of the first unit owners. Right away, Frank was unhappy with his new home. He said the garbage room was improperly vented into an underground parking garage. Frank joined the condominium board hoping to make changes, but the other members found him to be argumentative. He complained so frequently, they could barely get any work done. Ultimately, Frank was removed from the board. Over the next several years, he moved in and out of the building. He sold Unit 414, then purchased and moved into Unit 104, which was 21 square feet smaller. After complaining about a terrible odor in the unit, Frank moved out and rented it to someone else. In 2015, he attempted to sell Unit 104, but he encountered a problem. A new phase of the condominium building had recently been constructed. It featured several comparable units with lower maintenance fees. Frank's unit was not competitive enough to attract prospective buyers. After 5 months of trying to sell it, he gave up and moved back in. Not surprisingly, Frank would once again be unhappy with his living arrangement. In 2017, he sent an email to the condominium building property manager complaining about an electrical room that was directly below his unit. He believed that electrical equipment in that room was producing harmful electromagnetic waves that were penetrating his unit. He referred to this as dirty electricity. Frank claimed this caused an odor, vibration, and excessive heat and noise in his unit. He had multiple symptoms like tingling, rashes, fatigue, depression, headaches, brain fog, and asthma. In Frank's opinion, the source of the problem was the improper construction of the electrical room. He proposed a solution that involved constructing a drop ceiling in the room. Frank even offered to pay the estimated cost of $10,000 to make the upgrade, but only under the condition that he personally supervised the construction crew. The board of directors for the condominium investigated Frank's complaint. They consulted electricians, air quality experts, and the fire department. No problems were identified in Unit 104, but Frank continued to be unsatisfied. Over the next few years, his behavior became increasingly erratic. For example, he would roam the hallways of the building at night screaming. He frequently confronted condominium staff and residents, voicing his complaints and talking about a conspiracy to harm him. Frank once told a front desk worker that he would soon be walking with a baseball bat. During the summer of 2018, the property manager sent an email to the board of directors asking them to address the situation with Frank. She claimed that Frank was mentally ill and was getting everyone around him sick too. In November 2018, the board sought a restraining order against Frank, accusing him of threatening, abusing, intimidating, and harassing condominium residents, staff, and board members. In June 2019, Frank filed a $1 million lawsuit against the condominium corporation, the property management company, and the city of Vaughan. He maintained that noise and vibration issues were being caused by the electrical room and said he was being harassed because the board had poisoned everyone in the building against him. In October 2019, the court ordered Frank not to make social media posts about the board members and not to video record them without their consent. He was not allowed to communicate with them either. He could communicate with property management, but even this was restricted. Only email was permitted. Frank responded by suing his attorney, saying that she was a criminal who was in a conspiracy with the board of directors to take him down and defraud him of legal fees. He also made a report to the police, claiming his life was in danger. During the same year, 2019, Frank legally purchased a Beretta 92A1 chambered in 9mm Luger. This is a later variant of the Beretta 92F, famously wielded by Bruce Willis in the 1988 movie Die Hard. In December 2020, Frank filed another lawsuit. This time he was asking for millions of dollars and targeting the board members. He claimed that he had been taking several medications due to the poorly constructed electrical room, like he needed these medications to treat the conditions caused by the electromagnetic field. A mental health professional wrote a letter indicating that Frank had problems like anxiety. Even though this was in support of his lawsuit, Frank denied having a mental disorder and never attended mental health counseling sessions as recommended. Frank indicated that he was not a threat to the board members, rather they were a threat to him. Despite making this declaration, Frank continued harassing people in the building. He would enter the lobby and scream at people, claiming that they were going to burn in hell for selling him out, and he would call the condominium staff frauds and criminals. The board president, John Danino, would regularly pick up his mother, who lived in the same building as Frank. When John would arrive, Frank would yell obscenities at him. When John would return later, Frank was still there. During one incident, a property manager locked herself in her office as Frank screamed at her through her door. She ended up quitting just after one day on the job. By 2024, four property managers, including this one, had left the position. In September of that year, a judge found Frank in contempt because he communicated with the condominium corporation in violation of the 2019 court order. Frank was ordered to pay the corporation's legal costs of $29,500. There could have been other consequences as well resulting from this verdict, like being evicted, but the board requested to stay the penalty phase. They wanted to see how things would play out. Perhaps Frank's behavior would improve over time. After this, Frank did calm down quite a bit, and he paid the legal costs as ordered. Within a few months, however, he was back to his old behavior, claiming that the board was deceptive and demanding his money back with interest. The litigation was costly to the corporation. The board passed a special assessment of over $30,000 to cover the legal fees. This did not help Frank win any popularity contests among the residents. They were now paying for his misbehavior. In 2022, Frank's antics became even more troubling. On social media, he posted a series of videos complaining about the alleged injustice he was experiencing and went to the police to falsely accuse the condominium corporation of crimes. When the police dismissed his nonsense, he started picketing outside the building with signs indicating that his adversaries were killers. Even more disturbing, Frank did this while wearing pajamas. His signs claimed injustice, but his outfit said, "I just lost the fight with bedtime." In August 2022, the court declared Frank to be a vexatious litigant. He was no longer permitted to initiate court proceedings without prior authorization from a judge. This would bring an end to the frivolous lawsuits, but it did not stop Frank from harassing people in the building. The board decided to reinstate the penalty phase from the September 2021 court ruling. They wanted to evict Frank from the building. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On December 9, 2022, the condominium building had a Christmas party. Residents were surprised when Frank showed up. In defiance of the court order, he approached the board members and wished them a Merry Christmas. He shook their hands and explained how he just wanted to get along with them. This did not stop the eviction process. A hearing was scheduled for December 19, 2022. The likely outcome of this hearing was Frank being forced to sell his unit. He probably would have been provided 3 months to do this. On December 18, 2022, one day before the scheduled hearing, 73-year-old Frank Villi posted a 16-minute video on Facebook featuring many of his usual complaints. He declared that he only wanted peace and comfort, and he had dedicated his life to love and respect for humanity. Frank believed that everyone was afraid of the board except for him. He said, "I will speak until my last breath against these criminals." At 6:58 p.m., Frank walked out of his unit carrying his Beretta pistol. This is the one he had purchased in 2019. He pulled the fire alarm, which would have discouraged or prevented people from using the elevators. He went to the 16th floor and knocked on the door of a unit occupied by 79-year-old Vittorio Panza and his 57-year-old wife and condominium board member, Rita Camilleri. When Rita answered the door, Frank shot her and her husband to death. A neighbor called 911 at 7:20 p.m. after hearing the gunshots and seeing Frank with a pistol in his hand. Frank made his way to the nearby unit of 59-year-old board member Navid Dada and shot him. Navid called 911 before dying. Frank made his way to the penthouse and knocked on the door of the board president, John Donino, and his wife Doreen. The couple was hosting friends that evening. When Doreen answered the door, Frank shot her one time in the jaw, then stepped inside the unit. He pointed his pistol at John, but he did not fire. John threw a crystal vase and a candy dish filled with Christmas chocolates at Frank. The friends joined in and started throwing objects as well. One of them ran toward the door and grabbed Doreen, whose foot was keeping the door open. This permitted the friends to close and lock the door. 66-year-old Doreen survived the shooting. After this attack, Frank walked down 12 flights of stairs and went to the unit of 75-year-old board member Russell Manick and his 71-year-old wife Lorraine. He shot both of them to death. At this point in the rampage, Frank had killed 5 people and wounded 1 person. By now, the police were in the building looking for the shooter. On the 3rd floor, an officer encountered Frank as he was attempting to enter one of the units. Initially, the officer believed that Frank was simply another resident trying to access his unit. However, the officer then saw the Beretta pistol in Frank's hand. The officer pointed his service pistol at Frank, a Glock 22 chambered in .40 caliber S&W, and said, "Drop the gun. Do not move." Frank told the officer to shoot him. The officer replied, "I do not want to shoot you. Drop the gun." Instead of complying, Frank raised his pistol as if he was going to point it at the officer. The officer responded by firing his Glock 22 4 times. Frank was struck twice in his torso, dropped the Beretta, leaned against the wall, then collapsed onto the floor. He was pronounced dead at the scene. Now moving to my analysis. Here are my thoughts on a few areas that stood out to me in this case. Item number 1. Frank's daughters told the media that he was a controlling and abusive husband and father with a history of domestic violence. He was aggressive and possessed a Jekyll and Hyde type personality. His daughters had cut ties with Frank after repeatedly attempting to help him. Item number 2. In the wake of the mass shooting, most people condemned Frank's actions. A murder spree is not an acceptable response to resolve a grievance about a condominium, whether the grievance is legitimate or not. It is not unheard of for condominium residents to become displeased with board members. Resolving disputes is a difficult job, and parties are sometimes unsatisfied with the results. These bad experiences can result in feelings of intense hatred. This may explain why a small number of people came forward and expressed some level of empathy for Frank. For instance, a former board member in Frank's condominium building indicated that Frank was not a monster and said, "I think he was someone who was failed by the system. For it to get to this level, I don't understand." Other people took a much more extreme position and outright defended Frank, suggesting that the board members had it coming. Being a condominium board member has always been a thankless job. Now it appears to be a dangerous job as well. Item number 3, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Frank was paranoid and believed that he was being adversely affected by an electromagnetic field, or EMF. Sometimes this condition is referred to as electromagnetic sensitivity, or EHS. In the research, it is often called idiopathic environmental intolerance attributed to electromagnetic fields, or IEI EMF. I will just call it EHS. The condition was prominently featured in the popular television series Better Call Saul. In the show, the protagonist, Jimmy McGill, has an older brother named Chuck McGill. Chuck claims that he experiences physical pain, anxiety, disorientation, and other symptoms when exposed to EMFs. It negatively affects Chuck's functioning and leads people to believe that he is mentally ill. EHS is a controversial condition that does not really have much support as far as its legitimacy. The weakest EMFs that have been shown to induce biological cognitive effects are at least 25 to 50 times stronger than what people encounter in daily life. Studies have not identified any scientific basis for linking EMF exposure to mental or physical health symptoms. There have been several studies where participants have been exposed to real or fake EMFs. Consistently, the results of these studies have shown that people cannot reliably detect EMF exposure. Several mental health diagnoses are associated with EHS, including depression, anxiety, OCD, OCPD, somatic symptom disorder, illness anxiety disorder, and several disorders associated with psychosis. Frank was diagnosed with adjustment disorder. He may have had other disorders as well. I believe that several factors combined to make Frank very dangerous, for example, paranoia, conspiratorial thinking, his fear of EMFs, anger, vindictiveness, possible psychosis, and a sense of entitlement. Frank came to believe that the board members were conspiring to kill him using EMFs. There was no evidence to support his theory. An inspection found nothing wrong with his unit. The only thing short-circuiting was Frank's grip on reality. The board installed a new thermostat and adjusted a fan to reduce noise, but nothing satisfied Frank. He was insistent that an EMF was damaging him. He believed the board was hiding the truth. Angry and afraid, Frank went on a shooting rampage. Mental health counseling probably would have helped Frank, but he refused to comply with the treatment recommendation. Paranoia often prevents people from getting the help they need. Frank said he wanted peace and comfort, but in the end, he chose neither. He used his last breath not to expose criminals, but to become one. Those are my thoughts in the case of Frank Villi. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.